This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join Trader Nick in the United States for the latest from the markets and beyond. Nick, good afternoon from London. Good morning to you.
Hey, Johnny. Nice to be back with you.
Now, markets seem to be on a waiting game at the moment, Nick, seeing what, if any, agreement between the USA and Iran is signed off in the next few hours or indeed in days, if that is the case. Apparently, a draft agreement has been sent by the Iranians. So markets, I think, are optimistic about that. Subsequently, oil prices are down quite significantly.
That's right. We've got oil lower here this morning. But interestingly, we also see yields not moving, not budging too much. The dollar index remains elevated. And so there's a bit of tug of war here that we need to talk about with this latest draft. Now, what this seems to have been the story the last few weeks, Johnny, is we see the U.S. kind of have these statements, these, you know, we've mostly come to an agreement, we're going to have a deal soon, the war is going to end. We've seen that for a while. A bit of change of pace today, because we again have a draft being set forward, but this time by Iran. So Iran's state television said that we basically have a draft of the initial unofficial framework for a movement with the U.S. And what was interesting is that, again, the pattern has been for a while that the U.S. sets forth something like this, and then Iran kind of undermines it. Well, we reversed everything here today, where Iran actually set forward some things, and I'll talk about some of the contingencies, the specifics within it, and actually the U.S. nullified a little bit of that. The White House responded kind of being like, you know, that's fabrication. And we're seeing this back and forth fog of war stuff that we've seen for months on end now, it feels like. So just reading a little bit of headline here, Iran's state TV says, according to draft MOU, U.S. military forces will withdraw from vicinity of Iran and lift the naval blockade. They also, paraphrasing here, basically are stating that the agreement will be that Iran will have control over the Strait of Hormuz and will be handled in cooperation with Oman. So you look at this and you say, okay, this is a big statement from Iran in regards to what they claim they will get out of the agreement. And you know, we've known for a while that there's two main centerpieces to this ongoing back and forth negotiation, with the mediators being Pakistan, right? You've got all these mediators in the middle of it, no direct on face-to-face kind of conversations happening to speak of. And with all of that, the two big things have been the contingencies about the Strait of Hormuz, which we just discussed, which it is a big no-no from the U.S. that Iran would have complete control and, you know, kind of the autonomy and ownership of the Strait of Hormuz. That's a big no-no for the U.S., but obviously a big thing that Iran wants out of the circumstance. And the other component, the other big contingency, is the nuclear program that the U.S., Israel, and several other countries, NATO specifically, really does not want Iran to be engaged with. They don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. That has been the story for, I don't know, the last 30 or 40 years or whatever. And so we have this back and forth. But it's hard to imagine, Johnny. I'm very curious how it will all play out, because who is going to cave first? Because if we take a look at these two very distinct things that both sides have very, very clear, adamant, binary ownership over, Iran wants the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. does not want Iran to have the Strait of Hormuz. Iran wants to have a nuclear program. The U.S. does not want Iran to have a nuclear program. So you look at these and it's like, how are we going to get past this stalemate? We've had headline after headline of, we're almost there, we're almost there, we're almost there. And I think that if we were to have seen today something that was more both sides agreeing to some sort of discourse, some sort of agreement, then it would not surprise me if oil was down much more than 3.5% or 4% today, right? If we saw something where both sides had come to some kind of an agreement, regardless of what that agreement was, if the flow of traffic was going to start again in the Strait of Hormuz, we would probably expect to see oil prices down in the mid to low 80s or something like that, right? Some big drop one day, 10%, 15% would not be, in my opinion, out of the question to potentially see in that circumstance. So I think what the price action is reflecting here today, with a firm in the US dollar, yields not moving too far. In fact, the two-year yield is just eking out slightly a higher yield today. And you have equities that are kind of soft on the day following the announcement of this. I think what this may actually be signaling, Johnny, is that there's still a very wide gap between the US and Iran and this agreement coming to pass. And meanwhile, worth mentioning is it does seem that Israel is at the ready in the meantime, and ready to be involved once more if there is a need to re-escalate the war effort. So you have a lot of forces on all sides here, a lot of contention over what happens next. I do genuinely believe that both sides want to make a deal, but both sides want to make a deal in a way that is favorable to their own efforts.
I think the question also is, who has more to lose if there isn't a deal? And actually, I feel at this moment that the USA and by proxy, the West, the global economy, has more to lose because Iran has tested the USA right to the limit, hasn't it? And doesn't seem to worry about this thing going backwards because they know they've got the USA in a bit of a bind because they've discovered, possibly through luck more than design, that the Strait of Hormuz is quite a useful weapon in this war. So it's fascinating to see. And of course, we've got November elections coming up where you are in the United States. Trump will have an eye on that. Iran, of course, has major economic problems, but Iran not being a democracy to ride those problems and go, okay, we're not going to blink first.
I wonder too, just to add to that, Johnny, you said the words there, the key phrase of who's going to blink first. I wonder, and I don't have a clear answer, and I think that, you know, the jury is out on this. Who does time favor here, right? Like, who, as time passes, who is it favoring? I mean, we get these propositions from both sides, and then the other side shoots them down. And on one case, you might say, well, it favors Iran because Iran can, you know, sit there and they know that this is going to cause inflation, it's going to cause economic hurt, and there's elections around the corner. You've mapped that out really well. Meanwhile, it is definitely economically hurtful to Iran as well to have their main source of income challenged.
On the other hand, though, Iran has a regime. That regime has managed to overcome a potential overthrow over the last few weeks and months when many thought it couldn't survive. And it has survived. And it's been emboldened by that, despite the war. It still survives. Survival is what keeps this regime going more than anything else. Yes, of course, they prefer not to have wacky inflation and to be able to sell their oil and sanctions to be lifted. You ask the question, who has more time? In this case, I think it's Iran. Trump is in more of a hurry because, you know, we hear whether or not there's enough oil to get planes to fly over the next few months, the jet oil.
Yeah, fascinating points, Johnny. And the last thing I would add is, you know, when we look at the Iranian situation, what kind of help do they have in all of this, right? That's a big question here too, is because who can help to support their war effort from the sidelines? Obviously, there's the West helping or you know, contention there, right? Who's helping the US? Who's not helping the US? There's all sorts of contention. On the other side, what's the question for Iran? Who's, you know, supporting with whether it be money, weapons, etc.?
Russia, China.
Right. And that also brings into the other question. If we look back a few years ago with the Russia-Ukraine thing, I do also remember a lot of economists forecasting that Russia would capitulate after a few weeks because of the SWIFT system and all of the economic turmoil. And yet that war is going on too. So what we have seen is to your point, resiliency in regards to what, you know, very strong governments are able to do in regards to ongoing war efforts if it suits them. So completely fascinating.
When you say very strong governments, Nick, I mean, I think non-democratic governments, governments that don't face genuine elections, that is a plus, isn't it? If you're in power, you don't fear the ballot box.
Exactly. You're not worried about keeping your votes.
Nick, thank you so much for joining us today. Fascinating stuff. We'll speak again on Friday.
Thanks, Johnny. Speak to you then.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.